Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Our mission is to make analytics practical. This is not about abstract theory, but to share true stories of how using analytics helps real-life businesses with real-life constraints make the best possible decisions to compete, grow, and thrive. I'm your host, A.G. Tan. A few weeks ago, on episode 39 of the Ask Qubit podcast, we talked about how companies that embrace diversity in their hiring practices will only see benefits if they also ensure that their power structures are inclusive. Working towards an inclusive culture benefits everyone. It means listening to people, regardless of how junior their role. It means building trust in all directions, supervisor to supervisee, supervisee to supervisor, and across to peers who work in other teams. Also, you can't earn trust without showing respect. One way to do that is to listen, truly listen. It's a virtuous cycle that leads to more good ideas, more engagement, spotting more problems earlier while they're still small and manageable, less turnover, and is ultimately good for business. And if you layer on diversity on top of inclusion, you get all that good stuff squared. A bigger pool of talent, a wider range of experiences, better reflection of your customers, and so on. It's not easy though. Even if you aspire to all this, actually doing it means you need to consciously break with long-held patterns and knee-jerk reactions. It's one of the things we are actively working on at Qubit. One of our principals, Kathy Girac, was on a panel at an IBM event recently, and she said, "Qubit has always been a diverse organization, but now we are an intentionally diverse organization." Joining me today are the four members of Qubit's Diversity and Inclusion Program Committee, also known as QDIP: Andrew Chavis, Dallas Crawford, Gus Slaughter, and Odile Davis-Wolf. Welcome. Please introduce yourselves.
Hi, everyone. Andrew Chavis.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Gus Slaughter here.
Good morning, everyone. Dallas Crawford here.
Hi, this is Odile Davis-Wolf. Honored to be here.
So thanks so much for being here, everyone. So why was it important to have a diversity and inclusion program at Qubit? After all, Dallas is an influential senior executive here, and frankly, we have more women in our leadership team than men. So we certainly check the diversity box at the leadership level. Where was or is there room for improvement?
Hi, AG. So I'll attack this question first. For me, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. Is it about checking a box? Has Dallas been appointed solely on the basis of checking the diversity box, or was it a bonus to his knowledge, skill, and ability to fulfill the role appointed to him? I mean, I'd really hope so. How was the selection process? And is Qubit in a satisfactory position because the box is checked for one African-American in a senior executive role? How do we plan to expand from here? Having women in leadership and one African-American in a senior role is simply not enough. While we have a mix of races at Qubit, you know, Qubit still is predominantly white. So having a diversity and inclusion program helps to pinpoint these areas, start a conversation to help steer the company in an overall cultural direction.
No, thank you. And Gus, you wanted to comment as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I've been with Qubit for about 20 months. So I don't know if I can intelligently speak to, you know, Qubit's past in terms of diversity. But I do agree that we do check the box, obviously, with, you know, your comment around, you know, women in our executive and leadership team. But I don't know if that was, you know, something that was intentional. So I can't really speak to it all those years ago when those folks were brought on. But I know one thing that we as a collective agree upon in terms of where there is room for improvement today. And I think there's basically two things that I think we would all agree on in terms of where we could improve and why QDIP was constructed in the first place. So the first one is that, you know, we want to be deliberate about our perspective on diversity inclusion. And two, having a concrete strategy that goes along with that intention. So that's where we saw, you know, room for improvement, right? We have a diverse, fairly diverse pool of employees here in the company. But again, like I alluded to before, I'm not sure if that was intentional or deliberate. But nowadays, we want to be deliberate about the fact that we want to include folks of all different backgrounds, all different races and colors, so that we can get that color palette integrated within Qubit. And, you know, being deliberate means that, you know, we're going to have a strategy, to my second point, right? And that's certainly what we're doing and what our efforts are with Qubit. That's why you saw in the virtual company meeting and subsequent calls that we have a concrete strategy that composes of the three pillars where we feel that we can add specific action items to complete that would contribute to our endeavor to be a diverse and inclusionary company, right? So I think that's where we thought we could improve and just creating that concrete and formulated strategy to make us a diverse organization.
You know, thanks for that, you know, thorough answer, Gus. For me, what I took from that was the words deliberate and intentional. And since I was here when Dallas came on board, I can tell you that we were not checking a box with Dallas. He was simply by far the best candidate that presented himself for the opening we had at the time. And from the women point of view, I think part of that has been helped by the fact that we have two founders and one of them is a woman. And so she's always, you know, encouraged and mentored women who have come into Qubit and tried to help us succeed. But deliberate and intentional, I think that is exactly the piece that we need to work on. So thank you for that. So Gus, you mentioned our virtual company meeting back in July. So that was happening while the Black Lives Matter protests were going on all over. And you as a group did a joint presentation to the whole company that included some education, some historical context about systemic racism, and this was very powerful, personal stories. So I'd love to hear from each of you about that experience. What drove you to share your stories? What sorts of reactions did you receive from our colleagues? And were there any surprises? So I'd love to hear from all four of you. So let's start with Gus.
You know, AG, when we were talking about this amongst the committee, when we were informed that we would have the time to address the company in this respect, you know, we threw around some ideas as to how we would approach our time and how we would make the best use of our time. And one of the things that drove us to share our individual stories was, you know, the whole George Floyd incident really triggered us. And that was a huge motivation for us to drive our stories. And we talked about being very transparent. We talked about providing a lot of context. We talked about being really honest, because we felt that this was a point in time where those types of things were necessary in our commentary. So that's really what drove us to share, or at least drove me to share my personal story and to share what I wrote. And then to answer your second question, the sorts of reactions I received from my colleagues, I was pretty surprised that I received several emails from Qubit employees who I'd never spoken to before, and how gracious they were and how appreciative of the transparency that I and the rest of the team provided them. So it felt really good to know that my honesty and my transparency was appreciated in that respect. And to be honest, I was a tad frightened, right, to be this transparent. So it was good to get that sort of feedback. And I was surprised that they just reached out and wrote emails and things of that nature. So it was really a humbling experience. And, you know, I'm grateful that the message seemed to get across to my fellow colleagues.
Oh, thank you, Gus. You know, that's, you know, it really says something about how important it is, how valuable it is, and to take the first step, right, to make these connections. And it takes courage to make that first step. And I'm so glad that it panned out the way it did for you. Andrew, how about you?
Yeah, so I agree with everything Gus said. We did all meet as a group and determined that sharing our own personal stories would be the best way to effectively communicate to the rest of Qubit. And I will admit, like Gus, I was a little bit nervous because I've never really shared those experiences with such a large group of people. And I don't personally know everyone at Qubit. So really only my family and close friends knew about those stories. And it's not really such an easy thing to do, right? Being vulnerable in front of a bunch of people, but I think it was beneficial to everyone to share them. And I also wasn't really sure how everyone was going to receive them because not everybody has experienced those things. So I think that's why it was so helpful for us to share, because we were giving actual firsthand accounts of our experiences that our coworkers may not have known about prior. And I also did receive several messages from people at all levels of Qubit saying that they supported me and thanked me for sharing my stories, which did surprise me. I wasn't really expecting anyone to personally reach out, but I was pleasantly surprised, and it reaffirmed our belief that sharing our own personal stories was beneficial. And I also just want to thank my QDIP team for giving me the strength to present and share my stories with Qubit, because I don't think I would have if they weren't all encouraging me to do so. So I just wanted to say thank you guys.
Thank you. Thank you to all of you. That really, you know, speaks to, in some ways, the challenges, I think, of trying to change other people's point of views. Sometimes it's very, very difficult to walk in someone else's shoes. And I know from reading the survey after the company meeting, and also from the comments that were coming through at the time when all of you were talking, that this was really, really touching people. So it was really an important step. Odile, your turn.
Hi guys. So, you know, it was a bit different for me being Caribbean and having moved to America at 17 initially for college. I never really thought or had to think about the complexities of how I would be seen or perceived within an environment or even the workplace, just because of the color of my skin or the texture of my hair. And I think I was somewhat desensitized to the complexities because of how my Caribbean parents raised me. Sure, colorism exists in St. Martin, but it wasn't like a focal point as racism appears to be within the US. But I've lived here for almost 15 years now, so my naivety, it no longer serves me. George Floyd's passing, everyone protesting and joining the diversity and inclusion program here at Qubit has really allowed me to stop and reflect on the things that I've endured, dealt with, and do subconsciously. I can no longer just use being Caribbean as an excuse, because at the end of the day, if a cop were to stop me, if I'm the only woman on a Zoom meeting, the first thing noticed about me is that I'm Black. So in my speech at the company meeting, I spoke about simply being uncomfortable and to note the multiple things that we deal with prior to walking into a room or a Zoom call that's added layers on to just, you know, how I work. While it's by no means an excuse, it's what weighs on, you know, my brain and makes things subconsciously harder. Is my hair okay? Remembering to not speak with an accent. Am I the only Black person here? You know, did they team me up with him because we're both Black? Was that comparison to such and such a person because of how we look and so on? So overall, it's a bigger issue than I thought. And, you know, it has, you know, allowed me to do true self-reflection. You know, it's been a self-reflection experience for me. It was a great experience at the company meeting, being able to express to the colleagues and getting their warm thank yous and support afterwards, and just acknowledging areas that we all can improve on and be more mindful on.
Odile, thanks so much for that also. I think what's fascinating about your story is that in some ways it's a combination of an immigrant story, right, with a race story, I suppose, which is frankly, mirrors my own experience. I'm also an immigrant in this country. And it has been very interesting for me to learn how, I viewed American culture before I came to live here is very different from my experience in living here, and there's a certain richness to having had different experiences and understanding cultural contexts. But, as you so eloquently pointed out, at some point you have to also embrace it and not stand outside it, but realize where you live within the culture.
Exactly. It's just about that for sure.
Yes. All right. Last but not least, Dallas.
Yeah. No, I appreciate the time and the focus on this. The company meeting presentation, to be honest with you, and I think everybody alluded to this, especially Andrew, but it was about being heard, right? And the only way to be heard, in order to navigate buzz terms like implicit bias and systemic racism and a word that we haven't used enough, which is colorism, which is what we really deal with, which Odile alluded to. But really the only way to navigate that and to power through it is to personalize, in my opinion, and that's kind of what the group did. It's funny, that session really grew organically. To pull you behind the curtain just a bit, and pull the audience behind the curtain just a bit, we were all trying to think about the objective of getting through to people. And we know that preaching, statistical information or historical context, and in some broad brush, things that could be either Googled or read in a book was not going to be the way. And so we knew we wanted to personalize it. But to be honest with you, the session kind of grew from, the team just sharing the vulnerabilities that we just talked about. And the fear is a strong term, but there's probably no other term to use, but the fear to be honest with our colleagues and the abrasiveness that might be perceived and how that might come across. And, we thought the only way to power through that fear is to face it head on as you would do really anything else. And so, everybody has already talked, to get to the second part of your question, everybody's already talked about the reaction and the positive kind of things that were said about the team and about that session and how great it was received. But I only think that was possible by being personal, vulnerable, and brutally honest about things that we've experienced and taking the veneer off and really bringing it down to a level of, you work with me every day, whether directly or indirectly, you understand that I have a certain level of competence to have gotten here, and I still deal with these same systems and obstacles, right, every single day. So that's what it was about, is being heard, but also personalizing it so that it could be received. And I think, mission was accomplished for that session.
Yeah, absolutely. Mission was accomplished. But I think it's very important, and that's partly why we're having this conversation today, right? That it was an opening to the conversation. And it's very, very important that we don't lose momentum from that first reveal, if you will, or that first initiation, and then end up doing nothing about it. So the hard work really comes on the everyday things that we do to change our approach to hiring, to change how we work together, and so on. But the virtual company meeting session was definitely about as powerful an opener as I could have imagined. So since we just talked about this being just the beginning of a process of intentional and deliberate action, maybe one of you can tell us a little bit about what the QDIP committee has actually been working on to make this real?
Absolutely. So we rolled out a diversity and inclusion program because, to the point that you just made, AG, it was never about just giving an overview of things we've experienced. The purpose of personalizing that message was to endear and engender the type of support that we had so that this program that we were launching actually was going to have more willing and accommodating participants. And, you know, we've touched on this, but to reiterate, the Qubit team as a whole, every member of the company in some form or fashion has been very, very supportive. And we've carried the momentum from that meeting into launching this diversity inclusion program more formally. And we really built it into something that has already, you know, achieved some small successes. And a program is not a, you know, fly by night, simple hit these targets and go. It's really representing a change in how we become more intentional and deliberate, as Gus mentioned earlier, about helping people of multiple races, especially the Black community in particular, about helping them achieve more. And it runs the full gambit, everything from our own hiring and recruiting to grassroots engagement with our clients and our community to, again, just people and culture in general. So we rolled out this program across three kind of core tenets. One was people and culture. And again, that was, how do we influence the people in our organization and create an organizational culture where everyone is feeling like they're in a very inclusive environment, where we not only bring on more diverse talent, but again, create a safe space for that talent to be nurtured so that people don't have to worry about the color of their skin, the texture of their hair, the style that they choose to put that hair in. And it also was a good chance, frankly, for us to revisit some of our own awareness trainings and evaluations of our own implicit biases to make sure that we treat our clients with that level of nurture and care as well. So that people and culture was really about creating an inclusive environment for not only Qubit employees and constituents, but also when we work with others, as we do by the nature of being very heavily engaged in the consulting side of the business. It was about creating a more aware and a more inclusive workforce. The second pillar is client and community engagement. And that was all about not only paying lip service to wanting to help, again, all races, in particular the Black community, but how do we actually follow through? So we've done things like deliver donations to both the National Urban League and the Equal Justice Initiative. We've also had employees participate in voter registration drives, volunteer, things of that nature. We are also launching a mentoring program with an organization. There'll be more to come on that. And so a lot of it was about, how do we engage in the community, build grassroots programs? We're thinking about doing some pro bono consulting, and that has all been powered, frankly, by Qubit and the executive team actually allocating additional days in the vacation policy and the leave policy above and beyond to facilitate those types of things. So really, really powerful. And one thing I didn't mention on the people and culture, you know, I alluded to the training, but specifically we've done some cultural awareness training. We've reinforced our internal HR policies around behavior and treatment of diverse people. And again, ensuring we're in an inclusive environment, and rolled out new language in our employee handbook to solidify that. So that's those two pillars. And lastly, the Black professional progression and representation is our third pillar. And again, that's a very intentional deliberate effort to balance our workforce. You know, we talked about myself being a very influential leader at the company, and that's great, but we know there is other Black talent out there that gets missed for a multitude of reasons. It has nothing to do with Qubit not being open or receptive to talent. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here. It's about how do we uncover new ways to identify that talent? And frankly, that has an impact on our, not only our, you know, bottom line from a respect and our clients and peers will admire us for doing it, but it's several studies have shown that diverse talent at the top of the organization and embedded throughout the organization has top and bottom line impact. You know, when you break it down to revenue and profitability as well, because the more open you are to new and creative ideas and the more aware you are and sensitive to the community that you serve, the more effective you ultimately be as an organization.
Thanks for that, Dallas. You know, I think one way I think about it is it's almost like a canary in a coal mine, you know, sort of effect, where the visibility of diversity up and down the organization, not just at the top, but up and down the organization, and also making sure there are real opportunities for everybody to shine, is almost a sign of a company being open and ready for innovation, as you say, right? And so it's almost like both a precursor, but also a sign of what is really going on within a company culture. Because that can be very, very hard to put your finger on. You know, does a company really have an open culture that cares about its employees, or is that just a poster on the wall, you know?
Yeah, and just to, you know, reinforce what you just said, right? What we've done as an example under that professional progression tier with the full support, again, of Qubit is rewritten job descriptions to make sure, you know, when you speak of openness, that you're not paying lip service to it, but you're actually changing the way you phrase things so that certain groups don't feel excluded from the types of skill sets that you're looking for, right? And I can't state enough how powerful that is and the follow through that has already been executed, you know, in less than a year. So more to come, but just reinforcing that this is not about paying lip service to a task. There's lots of actions that have come behind this, and we are ready to roll, you know, as we head into 2021 and beyond.
No, like exciting stuff. From my own experience as a biracial Asian European woman and a serial immigrant, and so I'm always an outsider, I look for opportunities to connect with people and hopefully get them to see past any stereotypes they may have about any of the groups I represent. But I also feel the weight of responsibility. Like, I can't make a mistake because no matter how many things I do right, the mistake is all they will remember. And then everyone who looks like me will perhaps be judged by my mistake. So I have a two-part question. First, is this just me and my insecurities? And two, if I manage a team and I sincerely want to move the needle on diversity and inclusion, what are the top two or three things I should start working on first? So Andrew, did you have a comment on this?
So I don't think that's just you. I definitely feel a little bit of that as well. I also think that the person who only remembers the one mistake over the many other successes needs to reevaluate their priorities, but that is still a battle that we face. I don't think we should let it weigh us down too much, just because at the end of the day, we're still human beings and we'll continue to make mistakes throughout our entire lives. And the key is just to learn from those mistakes and try to get better every day. If I'm going to be judged by my one mistake by a person and then everyone else that looks like me is judged the same way, then I think that fault lies within the person judging. And I think as a society, we have to get over the prejudices that we have towards each other and get to know people before judging them. And of course, this is easier said than done. And to answer your second question, I think the first thing to do is just have open discussions about the topic with your team. Within the workplace, I don't really see diversity and inclusion progressing without the active communication and the willingness to learn and educate and communicate and actively work towards solutions. We've established a program that has those three pillars, and each of those pillars meet regularly to work towards the goals we've set out for. And even besides that, I think further discussions can take place within your team. And the second thing to work on would be to just continue normalizing the conversation. I think if you tiptoe around the subject, then it makes it much harder to move the needle. So normalizing the conversation will get people uncomfortable, which is good because we need people to be uncomfortable in order to make real changes happen.
You know, Andrew, I love that answer. It makes me think of a follow-up question, though. You know, one of the reasons, so why do we tiptoe around the issue? You know, so for example, I hope I am not, you know, a racist person or a terribly biased person, but if I'm completely honest with myself, I know that I have some biases. And I also know that there are things that I may not really have thought about, you know, which is why your personal stories at the company meeting were so valuable and powerful. So let's say I'm managing a team, and perhaps, you know, I have, you know, some, maybe I have an African-American, or maybe I have a Latino person, and maybe I have a disabled person on my team. And I don't want to appear as though I am ignorant, or I don't want to appear as though I'm discriminating. And I really do want all of them to be successful, but I tiptoe around my questions because I don't want to appear to be ignorant, right? So it becomes like a vicious cycle, you know? So I'm afraid to broach topics or ask questions or, you know, whatever, because I'm afraid it will appear as though I'm just, you know, unaware or not caring. How do we get around that?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be mistakes that will be made. And I'm not saying that that should make anyone exempt from what they do or say. But I think it's just the more that these conversations come up and the more that they involve people of all backgrounds, it will give everyone else a chance to learn about people that may not look like them or come from where they come from. Be able to see into those experiences and be able to really learn. Because I think the only way that we don't tiptoe around these conversations is by just trying to have them. And people are going to make mistakes. No one's just going to be perfectly culturally aware of all cultures in the world. So I think it's just a matter of being able to have those conversations, make those mistakes, being aware that you make those mistakes, learning from those mistakes, and then educating others.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really good point. Like, none of us is going to be culturally aware of everything, right? So I think basically it's a two-way thing. So, you know, you, for example, if I, you know, say something to you that indicates that I never heard of Juneteenth, you know, for example, you're going to respond, I would hope, by patiently explaining it to me, as opposed to perhaps rolling your eyes and telling me I'm a racist because I don't know, right?
Right. Yeah, and I think calling you a racist like that, I don't think that actually helps anyone, right? Because that just further divides us, right? I think it's taking the time to say, okay, maybe you didn't know what Juneteenth was, so let me explain it to you and break down the historical context behind it. But yeah, that goes for anything else. I think it's just important to do that and educate as much as possible.
Yeah, no, I agree, you know, and I, you know, and let's say I'm the person who didn't know, then I've got to overcome my own fear of being judged, you know, by asking the question, right? Odile, I felt you wanted to jump in here.
Yeah, I just wanted to say it is a almost like a double-edged sword. Everyone's really just walking on eggshells, not knowing what to say, how to say anything, and really not wanting to hurt feelings, but we really have to just, you know, grow above we have to step outside ourselves. It's really, at the end of the day, way bigger than any individual. If we're trying to make a huge impact on the world and have everyone focus on equality and justice, it's really not just being a selfish in the moment, but being more selfless and how we can, you know, make a change, not just for our generation, but for generations to come.
And taking the risk of looking ignorant is also a selfless act, I would say.
Yes, definitely. I'm so happy that I was able to join the QDIP team, because even amongst the guys, being the only Caribbean person, and I know I've been focusing on Caribbean a lot, but it's because there are a lot of areas that I don't know things about, understanding the way how politics work, the way how they've been raised and what they've gone through. I ask the stupid questions, you know, and I'm happy to know that there's a safe space where we can communicate with each other and it not be a matter of like, girl, how do you not know this? You know,
right.
There was even something just as simple as when we did our webinar recently about QDIP to the company, just in the way how I pronounced the word of a popular artist, you know, just being able to have that conversation and say, okay, guys, I get that I'm supposed to say Tupac and not Tupac. But at the end of the day, you know, it's just a matter of, having a safe space and we can have that conversation with each other, you know? So that's what I'm happy about. And if hopefully anyone listening to this can take away the whole idea or grasp the concept of having the uncomfortable conversations.
Wise words, Odile. All right, Dallas, do you want to wrap this up for us with parting wisdom?
My only parting thought is in line with what Odile just said, and it's really something for any senior executives or managers to think about when they move forward and try to solve these types of problems in their organization. And I'll come back to what she said, but I'll try to thread going back to earlier in our conversation. The first thing you need to do is be very intentional and very deliberate about how you want to impact change and how you want to influence change in your organization. And that means a change in representation, right? It's not just about we're going to post our jobs to these new, you know, more diverse organizational boards or this different society or this different institution. It's about how is our job description written, and is there potentially implicit bias that we haven't thought of or key terms that might trigger someone else, going back to that education piece, that we haven't considered? And how do we open up everything that we do in terms of how we communicate who we are, how we establish our organizational credentials? How do we become a more inclusive presence in additional, and meaning external presence, in addition to becoming a more inclusive organization? So that's the first thing you do. You have to map out your strategy, and whether it's adding more diverse talent or impacting your community in other ways, be very intentional and deliberate with the actions that you take. The second piece, going back to what Odile just said, is you have to personalize these things to the best of your ability. Everyone doesn't have to do it the same way Cuban did it, with, you know, employees sharing personal stories to some broad forum, but you need to figure out ways to tear through the broader stereotypical language and the buzz terms being used and put faces, people, and stories to them, because that is truly when people open up. And that's what goes back to having those difficult conversations, is you have to face these things head on. It's not a problem to be solved overnight. And it's certainly not a problem that you can solve with smiles, unicorns, and rainbows. You have to really do the work, have these discussions, and put the issues on the table the same way you would when you solve any other data-driven problem. So that's it.
No, thank you, Dallas. That was great. Thank you, Gus, Odile, and Andrew as well. I really appreciate you taking the time today for this great conversation and very important conversation. Thank you for tuning in to the Ask Qubit About Analytics podcast. Do stay in touch. You can email us at info@quebit.com or check out past episodes and transcripts at qubit.com/podcast. Until next time, take care.